Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Absolute, again, honor that you have joined this podcast, this platform that celebrates industry heroes such as yourself. It is a no legacy thinking zone. Do not even come to me and say I've got some legacy thinking, because everybody within industry is bold, brave, daring greatly, innovative, solving problems, and changing lives and changing the world as we speak. Thank you very much for what you do. You're making my life better, and that's really very special. All right, we've got two on this particular podcast. We have a gentleman by the name of Michael Bates, General Manager, Energy at Intel Corporation, Mad Skills. We have another gentleman by the name of Philip Carey. He's a consultant, has his own consulting firm, had many, many years within Southern California Edison, and we're talking about the utility digital transformation. It's an important topic, and it must be discussed. Let's get cracking. All right, we have it's a bit long because they have a lot to say. It's an important topic. A couple of things that you can do. One, you can listen to part of it, come back, listen to it again because it's important. And two, or both, it doesn't really matter with me, you can go out to industrialtalk.com, use the player, speed it up, boom, you're good to go. But these two individuals are absolutely exceptional, sees what has to take place within the utility space. And it is really, for me, being an industrial guy and being a utility guy, I really geeked out on it because it was exceptionally a great conversation. So I hope you enjoy it. All right, let's take care of some business real quick. I want you to get your calendar out. And this is the IoT Solutions World Congress in conjunction with the Industrial Internet Consortium. This is an event taking place October 5th through the 7th. 2021, and they're talking about IoT, AI, edge, you name it, digital twin. I like this one, quantum computing. How about that? There is no stopping the future. It's absolutely spectacular. All right, put it down, October 5th through the 7th. It's in beautiful town of Barcelona, Spain. Let's get our lives back in gear. That's what I want. I want ever this next normal to include travel. That's what I like. And boy, the people of Spain, this organization, IoT Solutions World Congress organization, as well as the Industrial Internet Consortium, put on a fabulous, fabulous show. Been there a couple of times, broadcasted live from there, enjoyed every minute of it. Next one. Put it on your calendar. This is in Cleveland, Ohio. This is November 9th through the 11th. It's the Manufacturing and Technology Show. And if you've never been to Cleveland, put that on your bucket list because it is a beautiful place with great people. And this event will not disappoint whatsoever. That's the Manufacturing and Technology Show, November 9th through the 11th. Put that on your calendar. A must attend event. Oh, I will be broadcasting from there too and connecting with all of the incredible individuals that are just innovative, that are bold, are brave. They're daring greatly. And you know what they don't do? They don't have any legacy thinking. Boom. Love it. All right, let's get on with the interview. So this, one of the topics and one of the things that I was always sort of wrestling with specifically to the utility space is the fact that how does utility, given all of this, the renewable stuff that's taking place with all of the real innovative stuff that's being put onto the grid, how do they manage and how will they manage going forward? And it is a digital transformation conversation and digital transformation solution. And these two individuals, Michael Bates and Philip Carey, bring the doggone insights and wisdom. So enjoy the conversation. Welcome. And I appreciate you guys wanting to talk a little bit about the electric utility digital transformation journey. And it's a journey. Welcome, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Thank you.
All right. You got it. You know, you got to do it. Nobody knows you. So you got to just say, hey, Mike, give us a little background on who you are, because they haven't gone out to your LinkedIn stat card right now.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen it either, but I'm glad to know that it looks good. thanks for letting me go first.
You bet.
And thanks for inviting me. Enjoying the conversation today.
Cool.
Have a little background with Phil so we can share some of our common experiences. But my role at Intel is to look for opportunities to apply our technology and convene our ecosystem of partners to address big industry challenges in our energy vertical. So energy in our case includes oil and gas, power utilities, the new energy service companies that are getting into the renewable energy services, for example, the EV charging area as well as digital oil field, smart ag, and water. So we look across different areas of energy and where the impact of the grid is there.
I like that smart ag. I had an opportunity to, I can't remember, it was in Oklahoma someplace. And the innovation that's being applied to ag, it's impressive. I just think it's cool. Everything is, you guys are cool, man.
I'd love to talk about it if you want. There's a couple of interesting projects going on in that area.
Well, we might have to just sort of dovetail and just go off on a tangent. Phil, thank you.
Yeah, okay. So my background's a little different. I was formerly at Southern California Edison for 22 years in IT the entire time, but started out in IT operations. And then at one point found myself in a architecture group and then transferred into a group called IT Smart Grid Engineering, where we were an IT group that was embedded with the OT group in transmission and distribution, the Advanced Technologies group. That's where I learned a whole lot about the business. And while I was there, developed this common substation platform. I retired at the end of 2019, and now I'm off on my own as a consultant, and I've done some work with Intel and with Dell Technologies, and here I am.
It's funny. I think the internet says when you retire, you become a consultant.
I think so.
It just does. I mean, there's nothing else you can do. It says it on the internet.
My wife keeps saying, I thought you retired. Well,
You don't want to get out of the game now, just when it's getting interesting.
You know that. You're right on the money on that one there, because this time is very, very exciting, very interesting. And I don't have the answers, but people like you, Mike and Phil, are in the game, and you're talking about this. And so we're focusing in on utilities, and typically utilities tend to be sort of legacy thinking. This is why we're here. This is the, and it hasn't really changed for a long time, whatever that long time. Mike, give us a little sort of, no, I'm going to take it to Phil because he was with Southern California Edison. Mm-hmm. Not to say that you're not that important there, Mike. You'll get your feelings not hurt. It's just sort of give us a little sort of that utility thinking, not today, but in the past, sort of that utility thought process.
Yeah, so the current utility networks were designed, we're using 100-year-old technology, essentially. It was designed to generate electricity and to deliver it to customers. And the utility's job was to get that electricity in one direction from the generator to the customer and to balance load with generation. And as long as load and generation stayed balanced and electricity was flowing through the system, everybody was happy.
It's true. It is. It's such a simple explanation, but it's like when I come into a room and I flip that switch, me consumer or me manufacturer or me whatever, that power better to be delivered at the right cycles. Right, voltage, all of the stuff. It has to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way utilities have been developed. It's just that's what it is, and rightly so. But what's changing, Mike?
Well, one thing is changing is the model is changing, and to Phil's point, the utilities of the past and still current were built around reliability, keep the lights on, so the talent they acquired, the training they gave, the policy and regulation to support that model has all been ingrained for, like you said, since the really much the inception of electric delivery. One-way flow of power from centralized generation, coal plants, nuclear plants, then through step down to consumption at the far edge. That's been the model, and the built and the technology has been in place to support that model of keep the lights on at all cost. And I think Phil might agree, and he's much more of a into the technology side than I am, but it feels like a siloed stack of solutions have been built around this grid reliability model. And now the grid, the delivery model is really turning upside down. It's changing from that one-way flow from centralized generation to two-way flow from hundreds and thousands and millions of points of generation on the opposite side of the grid, on the other side of the substation. So it wasn't built to take on that two-way flow. Equipment maintenance costs go up because equipment wasn't designed for it. There's lost opportunity cost because you're not connecting these new loads in a way under the kind of common substation platform that Phil required. So it's a major shift of focus from the generation side down to the consumer side, consumer-owned asset side. And now you're asking a company that's been built to keep the lights on mm-hmm. to now become a customer-focused company. Look, you know, if the opportunity in the future is around services, you've got to remake and re-engineer a company to make that pivot. And it's hard for some companies to make that pivot, especially in the utility space.
Yeah. And, you know, an example of that, and it's not this, not the utility industry, but IBM used to be the biggest hardware manufacturer in the world. And today they're a software and services company. They hardly make any hardware. So yeah. This is where the utilities need to go. And they need to look at how their business model is changing and accommodate that.
So, if you don't mind, Scott, I was just going to add to what Phil said. I think the other thing I've heard, the other comparison I've heard, Phil, and I think all of us on the call are around to remember the telecommunications restructuring, where the companies like the Southwestern Bells of the world who built all that infrastructure to enable what we see today were not the companies that really profited from it. It was Facebook, Google, Amazon. They used all that infrastructure that was built and created services around it, and the infrastructure providers haven't even caught up since then. I think that's one of the inflection points we're at today, is who's going to own that piece going forward.
So in a sort of simplified in my head, is that utilities were built in a way where I generate power, I transmit that power, I stick it into a distribution substation, and I just keep on bringing it down to the consumer level. Today, and that's fine, that's right. I see that flow. But today is like, okay, we have some that flow that go that way, right? But then on the other side of that transformer or that bus is also generation that's happening on that side. So now we're saying it's got to flow the other way, and it's got to flow into this magical system, and it's supposed to just happen. It's like everything just sort of lines up, but that's mm-hmm. not the case. That's not the case at all. So there's a couple of things that I see taking place. First off, and I think it was you, Mike. Yeah, it was probably you. The toothpaste is out of the tooth. The toothpaste is out of the tube. It's out. So we're heading down this road. It's happening. Whether we like it or not, it's happening. So as a utility, let's say I have my utility hat on, I've got to do something about it. What problems is this new sort of dynamic grid causing on my system, Phil?
So one of the large problems is load doesn't necessarily match the generation, specifically out on some of the feeder circuits. So to combat this, the utility really needs the capability to be able to reconfigure the feeder circuits to better match the load. Another issue is, in the past, if I had a fault on one of those distribution circuits, I could tell by measuring the power flow through the relay And when it got out of specification, I knew there was something wrong. The system knew there was something wrong, and that relay would send a trip signal to the circuit breaker. Well, now that I have generation on both sides of that relay, how do I detect a fault?
That's a very good point.
Yeah, so that's where some of this digital controls come in, so that we can measure and, you know how to deal with two-way flow of energy now.
So here's a funny, and here's a story from my past. So when I was with Southern California Edison, I knew, I'd go into that relay room, I'd have that smell, and distribution voltage, I could always see the lights, right? The lights, they'll dim, and I'll say, okay, that's one. They'll dim, okay, that's two. And I know that they're testing. The relays physically test the line. So there's an interruption. They'll test, and then lock out three times. That was like the policy at the time, right? And my dad, as a former lineman, he would watch the lights. And as a kid, I'm going, the heck's your problem, right? And he'll see it one, and he'll count two, and then he'll three. Oh. And then three bring, and then right off the bat, he'd get a call. But that's old time thinking. That's old way. Now with, like you just said, Phil, you've got generation on both sides. How does that physical relay know what's going on? Mike, what other problems are utilities dealing with in this particular, whatever we call it? I don't even know. Is there a term that we can call this particular world that we live in from utilities perspective? I don't know.
The general term I've heard is energy transition, but that includes lots of different things. But that's the term I've been hearing.
I'm just going to run with that one.
Yeah.
All right. Energy transition.
So other problems that they face, and again, some of this is technology, although I would argue the technology exists to do the kind of things that Phil and I are talking about. There needs to be investment in alignment, mostly through policy and regulation that allows for the type of investments. And I think we're getting there. I think there's other market drivers. So you asked the question before, or you didn't ask it. You were saying that this was an evolution. And you and I talked about this before. I was at maybe it was a DistribuTech dinner or something, and someone asked the question, this was 2 years ago, or maybe 3 years ago. It's like, everybody in the room that thinks that this is an evolution, raise your hand. And literally three quarters or more of the room raised their hand. Oh, this is an evolution. And it was mostly utilities, the understanding that this was an evolving process. It was under their control, or kind of evolve it as they drive it. But I think what's changed now, and then the rest of 10% maybe said revolution. I think if you did the same poll today, it might be the opposite, because I think there's market drivers outside of the utilities control that it really is forcing the change. One is a focus around sustainability and impacts of climate change that cannot be ignored by the utility. So mandates by states, companies. Again, particularly in areas where there's been energy resiliency issues, like in Texas around the storm, in California around the wildfires, where companies are looking for alternative sources to roll their own energy system. So as more and more of those, if that pain point keeps bringing more and more companies and customers to roll their own energy, that's more of a problem on the other side of the grid that Phil is talking about. So corporate sustainability driving a lot. And I also think we're going to start hearing more how financial markets are looking at carbon-based. So companies with high carbon footprint, carbon-based assets, which will move companies again away from that one-way flow of centralized power, which is dirtier in general, to more decentralized power on the edge. Again, exacerbating the problem. And then finally, EVs. One could argue we're at the inflection point now, but if you follow this industry at all, the companies that have declared the end of combustion engines, the policy regulator, the support from Europe and US around the administration. So I think those market drivers, and again, I'm sorry to go on so long here, but those market drivers are really pushing them in ways that are forcing them into this type of a platform that Phil's talking about, to be able to enable more services and become a player in this new opportunity.
So right, and you know what? It's a little bit more than that, because it's the regulators as well.
Yeah,
if you look at California's renewable portfolio standard, going to 100% renewables, I think it's by 2050.
Yep.
And Washington State, where I am at now, just in the last week or so, passed a carbon tax resolution in the House. So, mm-hmm. you know, those kind of standards are coming here. They're coming everywhere. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So let me you brought up a lot of good points there, Mike. One, I think you're absolutely right. Evolution versus revolution. And I think we're at that point. I think we're at that revolution. I just think that there's too many things taking place in the market today. I think the drivers of sustainability, climate change, market, EVs, and the regulator, those are challenging conversations to have. One of the things that, and I'll throw this out real quick because it just popped into my head. If carbon-based assets are going to be, you know, viewed poorly, how do you even structure a financial value proposition around a traditional generator? I think it's just going to, by virtue of that, nobody's going to be able to wrap it with any type of capital. That'd be tough going forward. Because you still have embedded assets that are still having some sort of rate of return.
And still being amortized.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and utilities don't like stranded assets.
Yeah.
God, right. Geez, Phil, I haven't heard that one in a long time. Stranded assets. I forgot about that one. Okay, listeners, I have a utility background, and stranded assets was a word that was bantered. Stranded assets. Get out shut the front door. Okay, so now we've painted the picture. There's a lot of dynamics. It's very fluid out there. And for Industrial Talk, we've had a number of conversations that revolve around the term Industry 4.0. We've talked about the edge, the cloud, this, that, everything around with that. But what component that was really missing was that utility. How does the utility fit in? I get it in the manufacturing world. I get it. I get it in the oil and gas. I see it. I see what they can do. Utilities, because of their sort of the way they look and what they are, this is a difficult question. Now, with that said, what has to change, Phil? What has to change in their mindset? Because they're not going away without being dragged, but it's happening. What has to change?
Yeah, and you know what? The technology of this is the easy part, right? Michael mentioned some of that technology is already around. It's usable. New technology is coming on board all the time. The problem is more with people than it is with technology. A lot of utilities don't even realize yet that they need this digital transformation. It hasn't quite hit them yet. I've been in conversations with many utilities, and you know, some of them are working on it. Some of them say, "Nah, we're not worried. we're not even thinking of that yet." But they need to be. There's a couple of forces at play here. First of all, if I'm a utility operator, you know, I have to meet my SAIDI and SAIFI numbers. Otherwise, my regulators will be, you know, really upset with me, and I could have some financial penalties. So if I operated my grid and it was stable last week, and this is the way I did it, that's the way I want to keep doing it, because it's a known commodity, and you know, nobody can fault me for doing something new that didn't quite work out.
It's true.
Another issue is what I'm hearing now called the silver tsunami.
Yeah, I've heard that too. And it's not the utility. You know what? They've been talking about the silver tsunami for years and years and years. You know what they do? They retire you, Phil, and then they bring you in as a consultant. That's what they do.
What is a silver tsunami? That's the first time I've heard it.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying there is that many of the workers on the OT side of the house, so the transmission and distribution in the case of utilities, are people that have been at that utility for 20, 30, 40 years.
Yes.
And change is a hard thing. You try to move one of these guys' cheese and they're going to let you know that they want their cheese where it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the people part of this is the hard part. Getting people right. to accept the new technology and also learn how to use it.
Yeah. So Silver Tsunami is that massive retirement that people like Phil were referring to that been there for 30, 40, 20, whatever years, right? And then all of a sudden, hey, I can retire. And then all that knowledge, all that intellect of utility stuff just goes right out the door and onto the lake. Where and what do you do as a utility? And I remember I was working with another utility in Arizona, and they were having the same thing. And these planners, so you can walk into the planning department and you can say, yep, retirement, 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 retirement. And they know where all of the switches are. They know where all of the funny, funky things that are out on their system that they got to be aware of. And they just let the crew know, right? Whatever, all of the stuff that's out there, gone. Mm-hmm. And to this day, we still don't have a real solution of saying, okay, we'll let you go, but we've got to go inside your head and pull out that information. And maybe Intel can get to that. It's like some sort of probe and just stick it on it into a system.
Nah.
You need Neuralink.
Nobody's thinking about it.
You do. So
it's interesting, Scott, there, a quick side story on that. I live in Texas. I think I told you that. And we had this winter storm that shut everything down. And I remember, and I'm not going to mention the city, but one of the city water systems went down because they couldn't get the emergency backup system back up because the owner's manual was lost and all the knowledge about how to turn it on and connect it. So it sat there for 2 days until someone, anyway, it's kind of a symptom of what you're just talking about.
So somebody just raised up their hand. Hey, Scott remembers how to do it. So Scott raises his hand and goes, hey, can you turn on this water? Certainly can. But
they had to bring him back as a consultant first.
That's right. That's right. I have a number in mind and it's on my napkin right here and I'll slide it across the table and you let me know. But it's the truth. It is such, and that whole Texas thing, and for some of the listeners out there, they had a real winter storm in Texas. Now, Texas is a unique system all to its own. It's called ERCOT, right? Did I get that right?
Yep.
And so it's sort of this little unique utility island in this whole other, you know, utility type of grid. And they were challenged. So
you really highlighted the problem statement that we're talking about right now. So one of the biggest feedback on during that time was there were areas in the ERCOT grid where the downtown areas were totally lit up. Buildings were running full blast, even though no one could get to that building. Everyone was at home while, you know, nearby neighborhoods were having rolling blackouts or in some cases, you know, days long blackouts.
Yeah,
and the response was, well, we couldn't turn those switches off because they're on circuits where critical facilities are, but that is not true. That gets to Phil's point. The technology exists today to do scalpel-like, precision-like control of those loads to turn those places that are in demand that aren't needed to areas that are without. But again, I think it takes a willingness and I think a different approach to policy as well, and also a willingness to invest to put that technology in place to do the things like that. Mm-hmm. Again, it just doesn't feel like rocket science to me.
Yeah, but here's the thing that I have. I'm a customer.
Yep.
And I don't want it in my backyard. Sure, I'm all about sustainability, but I'm all about having that nice, you know, turn on that light, whip into my computer, have that nice clean power, just sort of making sure that things don't, you know, fry. So is this new, brave new world something that is really consumer centric, or is it something that it's going to cause me angst? Either
you
one.
Go for it, Phil.
I don't know that it's so much consumer centric. You know, back in my SCE days, you know, we did the AMI, the automated metering infrastructure project, and we put smart meters out everywhere. And we made, you know, 15-minute meter reads and, you know, hourly reads available to the customers. And guess what? Most of them didn't care. They wanted their bill at the end of the month. They wanted the power to be on when they went and flipped the light switch. But most of them really didn't care to go and look and see what their energy usage was at 3 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday. So I'm not sure that it's so much consumer driven as it is sustainability and regulator driven.
That's interesting. You got any additions to that, Mike?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I would counter that. I think there is an opportunity. And again, I think the utilities have a great place to be the provider of these services, to engage customers in a way, I call it almost the democratization of energy, so that the power produced and or not consumed in partnership with the utility allows the consumer, or some people call these prosumers, producers and consumers of energy, to participate in a market in the same way other load nodes can participate in a market. And I think that will facilitate more. Well, one, it's going to facilitate resiliency into the grid, because the grid is, if we can optimize and orchestrate those many, many different loads. But I know it's yet to be proven. I mean, I agree with Phil on the energy management data. I didn't think that was very sticky either in some of the projects I've seen. But I do think if there is a way to make it really easy for a consumer to participate in an energy exchange, you'll drive higher adoption of these technologies.
It has to be super easy.
It does, and I still AI think, driven. For the most part, the average consumer wants their energy clean, green, and cheap.
Which is going to be difficult, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, got it clean, green, and cheap, but something's got to give in that particular. So we've created this reality. The utility grid is, there's a lot of mechanics going on out there. There's a lot of embedded assets. There's a lot of just old stuff out there too. It's like there's old stuff out there, and some of it's buried, and some of it's in these the relay sheds, and there's old assets out there. How do we then begin to transition, taking that reality, taking the resistance of utilities to a certain extent? Some are a little bit more willing than others, and they see it as it's definitely a cavalcade of feelings. Where do we start? Does the technology exist to be able to transition to this noise, this whatever this digital age that we want to go to, Phil?
For the most part, yes. Some of the advanced stuff, not yet, but we're really close to it. And like I said before, I think the technology is the easy part. So here's a little anecdote from me. Back when I started working in the smart grid engineering group, we were working on a large project, and my job was to assist the OT guys in doing some of the computer control. I was the infrastructure guy. And I saw the way that some of these things were happening. And being an IT, being a data center architect for as long as I was, we had been doing things for years and years and years that were pretty reliable. And I went to one of the engineers and I said, why are you doing it this way? There's this system and we can, make these changes and it'll make your life a whole lot easier. And he didn't want to hear it. That's not the way we do it. So pretty I common. Had, yeah.
Pretty common, unfortunately.
I had a unique capability in that I had essentially my own lab there, and I had access to their labs as well. And I decided that, I've tried to explain how I think this technology can work. They're not getting it. So I need to build it and show them. This is how it works. This is what it can do. So I did that in the lab and showed them. And over time, and it did take time, I started getting questions about the technology. Well, can it do this? Can it do that? what happens if we try this?
Come on, Phil. That's a long tail type of solution. I mean, you just got to sit there and go, okay, I'll show you, I'll create it. And then when you do create it, it's like, well, I'm interested in this little point here when you got this whole solution, right? And It's like, hey, you got to get them. It's like, oh, man,
well, but I got to drag these guys. It was good because they thought of things that I didn't think of.
Oh, okay.
Well, right? Because I was an IT guy, right? So they would come to me, well, can it do X, Y, Z? And I'm like, yeah, I think I can make it do that. So that led me to more innovation. It led them to innovation.
Yeah.
And frankly, that technology, the common substation platform, basically a compute system virtualized that's built on industrial hardware that can sit out in a substation and operate, that allows the engineers to think about ways to do things that they could not do in the past. And it frees up, you know, out of the box thinking. And I hate that term out of the box, but I'll go ahead and use it.
Yes. Back to those cliches, right? You just got to roll with it because I don't know of any other. You just got to roll with it. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. I was just going to say it also unlocks innovation in giving the utility the ability to securely federate that data out to the developer world to look for opportunities to provide new services to customers, because there's data there. Once you consolidate it under the platform that Phil was just talking about, unlocks all kinds of keys, some that utility is going to see right away and develop on their own, but many others, if they can figure out a way to federate it out, many others will come from the app development world.
And that's no, I got to interrupt real quick. Federated out, what do you mean by that?
So federate like in channels. So data sent autonomously for certain purposes and for specific applications, federated out so in a secure way, so that and again, I'm getting into areas where I'm touching areas I'm not that comfortable with.
So it's okay. I just didn't understand. It sounds good.
No, it's sharing the data in a way to certain audiences that you think that value, and it's really secure exchange. Is that right, Phil?
Yeah, because if you look at it today. Meter data is over here, and voltage measurement data is over here, and outage data is over here. And in most cases, that data never meets. But if you could combine that data into something useful and then run some analytics against it, a good example is that most utilities' inventory of assets is dismal at best.
And they're done that. Absolutely understand exactly what you're saying. I didn't know that was there.
Yeah, and I think for the most part, if you look at the field, the utility does not really know what transformer my house is connected to.
Yep.
They may, but they may not. They know it's one of these in this area because the house is in this area. So there was a program that I saw where the utility was able to take the voltage measurement data from the smart meters and run analytics against it and determine which group of houses were connected to the same transformer. That's just a small example of
And that's good for customers, right? That's good. If I'm out in the field and I got a power outage, right? And if I had that data, I would know that that transformer is feeding this neighborhood or this group of houses. And it allows me to think a little bit different. I can switch over here, do this. It changes my look at the grid if I'm out in the field and saying, switch there, do this. Oh, okay, we got it.
And for the most part, smart meter data is transforming the way that repairs are handled, right? Because the old way is... first of all, the utility didn't really know that there was an outage until somebody called and said, my power's out. And then when that somebody called and said the power's out, they would send a patrolman out to go and follow the lines and see if they can find where the problem is.
Yeah.
Where now you get outage reports from smart meters, if your utility has smart meters, and they can pretty much pinpoint where the trouble is.
Yeah.
I like that.
One other interesting project that's related I've been part of is an idea to deploy, I'll call it autonomous mobile batteries. So batteries charged up in, outside of the community in areas where solar can be. So this would be in an area, this is in particularly in a very dense city environment where you can't put a lot of solar in. So if you would put the solar farms would be on the outskirts of town and mobile batteries would be there charging and discharging out into the network where the power is needed. These would be large size batteries. It could even be smaller size where their dual purpose could be even transportation. So picking people. So it's a mobile battery first and then a, but that type of technology that Phil's talking about would be able to map out that autonomously and move those energy resources around in a way that makes it look like baseload, which is what we're trying to replace. Yeah. You don't, until you make it look like baseload and act like baseload,
yeah,
it'd be hard to get to those mandates that Phil's talking about.
But that's part of the problem, though, with the way that people think about change, right? Lots of utilities have automation. Mm-hmm. Automation to where a operator pushes a button and XYZ happens. You start talking about autonomous operation, that scares the heck out of people. Because right now, just about every operation that happens on the grid is initiated by a human. There's yes. human in the loop. So, you know, the outage management system, the energy management system, it comes up with a solution and then waits for the operator to say, execute.
Yeah, go.
Yeah.
It is. It's still down to that switch. Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. You're spot on that one. It's, yeah. But okay. I'm bullish on the future. I'm bullish on the ability for smart people to deal or to address these opportunities, these challenges within. And I believe from a consumer perspective, either we will be unaware, which is good. It's unaware. I'll give you an analogy. So this is what happened. It's those micro interruptions that when I was a lineman would drive customers crazy, like a blip. And the reason for that, normally for an analog clock, no big deal. They don't care. Hey, it's still 3 o'clock. But when we came to the digital clocks and you had that little interruption, then everything in the house are blinking.
4 o'clock, 12
high,
o'clock.
High 12 power
o'clock,
outage.
12 o'clock. Yeah.
Power outage. And that's when everybody said, well, I don't like this. What's going on with my power? So if we can make it to the point where people are, they don't see it, right? Mm-hmm. Then I think we're good. But I think we can answer these questions. Mike, where do you see it sort of going? I mean, put on your future hat. Let's say, what if, dream. What do you think it's going?
That picture. Yeah. So first of all, it starts with something you asked earlier, which is what do we need to do? And then I think one of these things will help the domino. Despite the market drivers we talked about, I still think there's a lack of education at the consumer level on some of these challenges. So I think I'd say one of the big things we need to invest more on is consumer education. And when I say consumer, I'm talking about every type of consumer, not just residential, multifamily, but also corporations and commercial and industrial on what this smarter grid, to use a term that's overused, can deliver in terms of benefits. Past that, I think the future will look like a lot of what the content delivery world looks like today, the Netflix streaming world, where when they first started delivering content, they recognized that, you know, coming from a central server was not going to not cut the deal. I think now as we expand in the ways we've talked about, I think a tiered compute network is going to be what the future looks like, where the right amount of compute sits at the right part of the transaction. And there's a platform layer, like what Phil's talking about, I think that orchestrates that. Who wins that role, I think, is still up for grabs. I think the utilities are still in the lead position, in my view, because one, the position they have today is still pretty sticky through policy and regulation. I also think their brand is still valuable in this area around the new services they create, but I also recognize the new market entrants that are coming into this space that are super ambitious. So companies like Shell and some of the big oil and gas companies.
Oil and gas.
Moving out of oil and gas. So that's a, so who wins that platform play, I think, is who the future winners are. That, but I do think it's a big platform play that orchestrates this, this new energy system.
What about you, Phil? What do you think the future looks like?
The future is definitely digital. Gone are the days where the grid is stable because of inertia, meaning that most generation is done by a big spinning mass, and that mass wants to keep rolling on when something happens. We're going all inverter-based now with wind and solar, which really needs some fast controls to stabilize the voltage and, you know, keep things up. I think utilities, a lot of them have realized that they need to get there. Some are just beginning the journey. Some are still saying, nah, it's not going to happen. But
Okay. Yeah. Go right ahead and think that.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's coming. And, you know, we need to educate everybody.
So,
you know, from the consumer to the operator.
Yeah, it, but here's the funny thing, and being in the education, there's one. There's always going to be that percentage, and it's a high percentage that really don't care. Okay, I'm not going to listen. I don't care. I've got to dig this ditch out here, and I'm going to be doing that. But what's interesting, if we truly desire a sustainable, nimble, a system, the digital solution is the only way that we're going to get there. The physical solution that we have today does not allow for any of that to really, it sort of here. Yeah. We'll let you have this little area here, whatever, but to truly transform and create something that is sustainable, it's a digital innovation type of conversation. You won't get there. And I guarantee you they'll lose that battle.
And furthermore, Scott, it's a digital control at the edge.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Some of these operations that are going to have to happen quickly, there's not enough time to send those digital signals back to a central location, have it processed, and then a command sent out to do something.
That's interesting.
Yeah, there's a functional safety component to that, too, that you mentioned, Phil. When power's coming the other direction and there's an outage, you got to know if your lineman the system has to automatically adjust for the safety components of this new system as well immediately.
Well, and then there's another big one is when you start decentralizing the system and run these systems over networks, you need to pay a lot of attention to cybersecurity.
That's a whole other conversation. You're spot on that one.
Huge. It is. And you can, in my opinion, triple the amount of compute power that you need to get this work done when you lay over the cybersecurity components on top of it. So the computers that they use today, these fanless, pretty gutless computers that can get the job done today, they're not going to get the job done when you lay cybersecurity over the top of it.
Yeah.
So
is it doable? Are we, I mean, I'm talking to two of the best in the business. Is it doable? Are we going to get there? Whatever there looks like.
I think we are.
Yeah. I think a lot of it's being done. There's demonstrations of this. Good. Again, it's not at scale yet, but I totally agree with Phil. It's not a technology problem to solve. I mean, technology exists to assemble the platform to deliver the services that we just described. It's the people for sure. It's also the momentum behind the incumbent legacy system. There's so much investment in it, all the way up and down, that it's hard. It's like moving an aircraft carrier with a tugboat. It's just really hard to move it. I think we've talked about that.
But it's going to happen. It is. And we're going to have to wrap this conversation up. We've been going on for about 45 minutes. However,
cool.
Mike, how does somebody get a hold of you?
Michael.E.Bates@intel.com is the best.
Excellent. Phil.
phil@carryconsultingservices.com.
That's like your last name.
C-A-R-E-Y.
That's like your last name. Is it? Do you know the guy?
I have an in.
Hey, here's my resume. You two were excellent. This is just scratching the surface, and I can see additional conversations taking place as a result of this conversation, because I mean, we haven't even talked about the regulatory component. We haven't talked about any of the I don't even have the answers, and I like the fact that it does. It just gets down to people, and then once the people make that decision of saying, yeah, it's going to happen, then things do happen. But you're right. Yeah. Technology is technology. It just is.
It is. Yeah, you know, and you're so right. When we were working on, you know, some of this new technology, we went out to one of the locations where the engineering groups were. Gentlemen from the networking group and myself, we went out to go discuss IP addressing schemas with one of the substation engineers. And first of all, we started out with him not trusting us because we were from IT. But by the end of the conversation, by the end of the conversation, he was ready to throw us out of his office physically. But a year later, he was one of our champions.
Yeah.
When he finally realized that this was coming and that there was no way he was stopping it.
So cool.
Jump on board, baby. Or jump in the pool. The water's fine. It's all nice and cool and refreshing. Yeah. Gonna have to do it. All right. Thank you very much. Okay, listeners, thank you very much for joining the Electric Utility Digital Transformation Journey. It's a mouthful, but it is what's taking place today. Oh, I forgot to ask you. It's global. We're not the only ones that have to deal with all of this. It's global, baby. Maybe to some extent or another, but it's a global challenge that I believe the technology can solve, but it goes right back to the people. Right back to the people. All right. Thank you, guys.
Have a good one.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right. Big old shout out to Michael Bates as well as Philip Carey. Both are just top-notch professionals in the world of digital transformation for utilities. They're solving big problems. Look them up. Get out there. You'll have all the information out on industrialtalk.com. Again, I want you to make sure that you put this on your calendar. It's the IoT Solutions World Congress as well as with Industrial Internet Consortium. Great people, great organization, great event. That's October 5th through the 7th in beautiful Barcelona. And the next one that we want to make sure that you put on your calendar is the Manufacturing and Technology Show. And that is in Cleveland, Ohio, November 9th through the 11th, 2021. Put the Cleveland trip on your bucket list. You will not be disappointed. Great food, great people, great location. All for you. All right. Be bold, be brave, dare greatly. That's what industry is all about. Hang out with more bold, brave, and daring greatly people, and you will change the world. No legacy thinking here. Ask the questions, why not, and what if. Enjoy your day.